You are listening to the Health and Wellness Connection Podcast, the number one wellness podcast designed to provide the latest information to help you achieve your health and wellness goals. Our show features exciting guests, the latest in medical research, and in-depth discussions in current trends on weight loss, nutrition, and fitness. No matter what your interest, the Health and Wellness Podcast has you covered. And now, presenting your illustrious host, Dr. Barry, MD.
Hello, 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 and thank you for listening to the Health and Wellness Connection Podcast. I want to thank you for being a faithful listener and checking us out every week on Afro Vibes Radio. But hey, if you somehow don't get a chance to check us out Thursdays, 4 p.m. Central Standard Time on Afro Vibes Radio, please don't hesitate to check out our podcast page. That's anchor.fm/HW Connection. That's HWCONNECTION. Again, check us out on our anchor.fm podcast page. Check out all the shows uploaded there immediately after the show airs on Afro Vibes Radio. Also, if you want to listen to the show live on Afro Vibes Radio, please download the app, AfroVibesRadio.com. You can download it from the website or go to your local or favorite, mobile OS app, be it Android or iPhone. Download the app on your phone today. You can stream the show as well as the awesome Afrobeat Music Collection live on your phone for free. Again, no money down, all free, all awesomeness. Do it today. Again, if you want to reach out to me personally, you can always get at me on Instagram. My name, Dr. Barry MD, DrBarryMD. Also, you can email me at drbarryhealth@gmail.com. That's Dr. Barry, DrBarryHealth@gmail.com. And last but not least, Facebook is also where we're at, posting all the shows as well as other exciting articles. Check us out at www.facebook.com/nextlevelweightloss. Again, please don't hesitate to reach out to us. We love hearing from listeners. Any feedback, any even sponsorship opportunities, because we are very highly listened podcast, always looking for sponsors. Check us out if you're interested in sponsoring the show. And also, you can do it on the Anchor FM page. You can donate, become a super sponsor. We're going to get a lot of cool freebies for those people who do sign up. So check us out again. It's Dr. Barry here. Thank you for listening. Stay tuned for the show. Hello, 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 and welcome to the Health and Wellness Connection radio show / podcast. It's your host, Dr. Barry here. I want to thank you guys for joining us for another episode of the Health and Wellness Connection. Now, this show has really been about, you know, kind of focusing on some of the pressing health and wellness issues facing people all across the globe. First off, before we go any further, I just want to thank listeners all over. Get a lot of great feedback from my listeners all over the country, from the United States, where we're broadcasting from, as well as Europe, UK, Germany. Definitely big fans out there. I want to appreciate you guys for listening. And just say, you know, especially Africa as well, Nigeria, of course. Thank you guys for tuning in to the show every week. Of course, catching us on Afro Vibes Radio Live, where we broadcast almost over 1 million listeners per week, as well as our podcast, which is also getting great responses. So thank you guys for tuning in. Really appreciate all the great responses we're receiving. And we're going to keep bringing you that what we consider is that hot fire. Anyway, so back to serious business, guys. We're talking about the coronavirus and kind of some of the new developments we're seeing in that space. So, of course, we know we like to usually hit the numbers first, kind of let people know what's going on as far as the numbers as they are currently across the globe. All right, so the total cases globally at this point, this is again mid-August of 2020. We're currently at 20 million global cases, exactly 20,800,961 cases globally, officially 747,000 deaths, and about 13,700,000 people have recovered from that initial number. So the coronavirus still is definitely a thing and still causing quite a bit of death and destruction and confusion across the globe. Now, of course, you like to go through some of the numbers, and USA is still leading the pack, really outpacing other countries at this point with their new infections, averaging about 50,000 new infections per day, which has kind of been the average in the United States for the past few weeks, with about 1,300 deaths per day. And so those are definitely concerning numbers, definitely the top numbers as far as new infections. Well, not new infections, actually. Another country has new on the list has overtaken in the new infections category, but the death rate is still definitely the highest currently in the United States. So it's definitely something that the World Health Organization and all the local people in the United States and the global health community has been quite concerned. It's believed that the United States has really not done all that it could do to really prevent the spread of the virus. And as a result, it's really suffering some of the highest infectious rates that has been seen in the developed world. So, of course, many countries are, really kind of disappointed with the United States, and as a result, are banning travelers from the United States from entering to their countries. It's believed now that the United States passport is one of the weakest in the world, when it was previously one of the strongest, due to the lack of ability for its citizens to travel internationally. We all hope that after this whole coronavirus pandemic is kind of passed, who knows how long that will take, unfortunately, but we hope things will return back to normal after that period. Now, as far as the other items when it comes to the coronavirus. All right, so number two on the list as far as countries suffering from the coronavirus pandemic is Brazil. Brazil has been really closely following United States as far as this new infectivity rates as well as deaths. They're averaging just north of 50,000 new infections per day, with about 1,100 deaths per day. Now, it was well known that Bolsonaro has not been the most enthusiastic about fighting the virus. Of course, going with the virus is a hoax mindset early on, causing a lot of miscalculations and unpreparedness, frankly. So as a result, they've now started a more aggressive approach toward the virus, treating those who may be exposed, trying to minimize spread, which has helped, but still there's a lot of damage being done, unfortunately, resulting in the high number of new infections and new deaths. India is another country that's also been slowly making its way up the list as well, and unfortunately it has landed at number three. They actually have the highest number of new infections as far as daily infections with 67,000. So definitely a concerning development in the Indian country with the new infectious rise, or I should say surge, of coronavirus infections, followed by the deaths in India are about 950, just a little under 1,000. So very significant as far as the number of new infections in India and in Russia. Interesting thing about India. India has definitely, believed that there has been some undercounting going on there as well, as are most countries. There was one recent report that came out regarding some of the new infections we're seeing in India. And it's believed that India has had a huge, wave of coronavirus that just may not have been previously diagnosed. There was one study that was done in Mumbai, one of the largest areas in India, one of the largest cities in India. They looked at 7,000 blood samples from people in the city, and was found that 57% tested positive for coronavirus antibodies. So, which is pretty shocking, because that would indicate a significant number of people have been exposed to the virus and have already developed immunity to the virus. So this is something that, shows that there's a large number of people who have been getting this illness and have recovered and not really showing any symptoms, but still developing antibodies to this virus. So it's definitely showing that, the numbers, even though we're reporting these numbers, they're likely undercounting the people who are actually truly positive for their illness. So, we take this for a grain of salt. But unfortunately, the deaths are still real. People are still dying. So even though the numbers of new infections may be lower than probably what the reality is, The reality is there are significantly rising numbers of deaths. So we got to take this thing seriously to ensure we reduce those rising death tolls. So moving on, it appears that there's a lot of different attitudes toward management of the virus. And one of the biggest countries that has really kind of approached the treatment strategy as far as a global strategy has been Russia. Now, Russia actually is also suffering its own virus pandemic, as new cases of people being exposed has also surged in Russia as well. Now, if we look at the numbers, Russia is number fourth on the list with approximately 5,000 reported new cases and about 129 new deaths. The reason why Russia is so unique, because Russia is a large country, 145 million people, and it's believed that initially they were undercounting as well, but lately they've actually risen into the news quite suddenly due to the development of their entire vaccine protocol. Now, we're going to talk more about vaccines here shortly as we do a brief roundup of some of the newest treatments being developed, but Russia's vaccine program is very unique, and we're going to talk about that right after we finish these numbers regarding some of these coronavirus pandemic numbers. But yeah, keep that Russia in mind. Again, Russia still battling its own coronavirus pandemic as well. Now, the next country, number fifth on the list, is South Africa with 500,000 total cases, only about 2,000 new infections and about 250 deaths. So as far as Africa is concerned, South Africa is definitely leading the pack. Africa in general has, you know, relatively low numbers, even though they also are undercounting more than likely. But overall, their numbers have been relatively low compared to some of the other nations. But South Africa has had a significant amount of issues dealing with the coronavirus. So we hope that they will continue to fight infection with a lot of the strategies that they've learned from other countries to reduce the risk of significant mortality to their population. So yeah, so that's kind of the issue here regarding the coronavirus numbers. They are definitely kind of still spiking across the nations, across the globe, I should say. So we have to remain vigilant and you know, make sure that, you know, even though the numbers may be dropping, it doesn't mean that coronavirus has actually gone away completely. A good example of this can be seen with the issues in New Zealand. It was reported that New Zealand was coronavirus free a few weeks ago. There were celebrations in the streets as it was believed that coronavirus had disappeared in New Zealand. Apparently, no cases had been discovered, no new infections had been discovered for about 100 days. And I think the last person who had tested positive tested negative like a few weeks ago. So when that person tested negative, it was a grand announcement stating coronavirus is no more in New Zealand, and it was coronavirus free, and they were opening up the country to full blown back to normal activities. There was even pictures going around the internet of showing full stadiums in New Zealand, jam packed with fans enjoying a soccer game or a rugby match or some sort of sporting event. So the reality is, I think they were being a little bit premature in their celebrations. We say this now because there's now been a documented outbreak in New Zealand. This is after 100 days of apparently no new infections. Apparently it was discovered there was a cluster of patients who had not actually believed to have been exposed to anyone who had recently come from outside the country. They had not recently traveled, apparently, but apparently a case of coronavirus has popped up in New Zealand in a small town, and yet you know, it really baffled the local health authorities there. So New Zealand has now decided to reassess how they're approaching this coronavirus. They have now realized they are not out of the clear, and unfortunately, they're gonna have to determine the best strategy to reduce the risk of this becoming a source of a second wave. We all know that it only takes a few cases of coronavirus to really cause a significant spread of the illness due to the high contagiousness of the virus. This is partly the reason why the churches were implicated early on in many of these ways, because churches were considered highly infectious areas due to the activities that go on in the church, the hugging, the singing, the yelling and screaming and so forth. And that can be very excellent ways for the virus to spread from person to person. So given these developments in New Zealand, it's going to be very interesting to see how, you know, they respond and how they kind of try to reduce this new infectious cluster from becoming another serious spread of the virus. So those are the major news reports regarding some of the new virus numbers. But one thing about the virus that we can definitely say is that it's really going to affect how we kind of interact with each other, how we, you know, entertain ourselves, or how we even enjoy, you know, each other's company. One of the biggest experiments that's kind of developed from this whole coronavirus kind of pandemic has been the NBA bubble and their sports experiment. Now, this is not really a sports podcast. We don't really talk too much about, athletic endeavors, but we also are big on, you know, physical fitness, and sports has been a great way for people to stay fit. And I'm sure many of my listeners are, you know, participating in organized sports, and schools have been struggling with the concept of how to reintroduce sports back into the curriculum or back into the overall routine of the students and keep them safe. The NBA has taken a unique approach in doing this, and by creating a bubble, if you will. And now the bubble is basically, they've kind of sealed off a hotel. They actually chose Disney World to create this situation where essentially everyone coming in and out of the facility would have to be tested repeatedly. They'll have to be screened, and they'll have to be quarantined before they can be allowed to interact with some of the other participants in the bubble. Now, a certain number of players went down to Florida so they can participate in this experiment so that they can, you know, play the sport that they love, which is basketball in this case. And it's something that many schools and other, you know, and entities have been just looking at potentially replicating. The reason why the bubble is getting a lot of positive praise is because out of the 100 players, or the sorry, the 300 players that are in the bubble combined with some of the external staff, no one has tested positive over in over 100 days, which is something that can't be said for some of the other leagues like the MLB or the NFL, which have had significant outbreaks of various teams throughout the country. So the bubble is a unique experiment that we should all kind of pay attention to, because this potentially may be how, you know, we have to kind of engage in sports and public events in the near future, especially if the vaccines that are currently in development are found to not be effective. And that's something that we're going to discuss in more detail. There's a lot of developments on the vaccine front. We're going to talk about that more on the second half of the Health and Wellness Connection, guys. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned after the break. Hello, 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 and welcome back, guys, to the Health and Wellness Connection radio show/podcast. Thanks for joining us again for the second half of the show. We're talking about the coronavirus again and how it's affecting kind of our overall movements across the globe. One thing that we talked about last week, which was actually a big hit, was the pediatric show talking about what do we do with the kids going back to school. Now, since that show aired, many schools have reopened, and can we say that things have been less than smooth? Now, the reality is this. Coronavirus is something that has been shown to spread to children. That was something we established pretty clearly on the show last week with our special guest, Dr. Ngozi Obuehi. Now, one thing that we kind of talked about was how the coronavirus potentially could be a problem for people who live with small kids. And this has kind of been the concern, because kids are believed to be very strong vectors because they really don't get that sick from the virus. Now, there are some kids who are definitely susceptible to the virus and could potentially have complications, but most children don't get sick. However, they are very significant spreaders, meaning they do excrete the virus when they're positive. They can potentially spread it to others very easily, like they do with other viruses. Kids are very well known to be super spreaders for everything. They get sick real easy. They give other people their bugs real easily. They're cute, so you want to hug them, and then they get you sick. So that's just kind of the way kids work, some of the drawbacks of kids. Anyways, but either way, kids can be a spreader of this virus. And this is why schools have been an issue for many people, because teachers especially, if they know that kids get sick and they may be somewhat immunocompromised, they potentially could be exposed and so forth. And this has led to a lot of back and forth between administrators and schools. We all know that the federal government has been pushing for administrators to reopen schools, and in-person schools was so important. We even talked about how the Pediatric Association of Pediatrics released a statement saying that they encouraged in-person classroom instruction due to the psychological needs and all the social needs and so forth, and all the other stuff they were stressing. But the reality is that we really don't know how this virus will do in an in-live environment. and it's going to be an experimental situation. Now, I can tell you guys personally, I've actually put my kids in virtual school because I don't really want, I think my kids exposed now. I've had some other parents who've told me otherwise, say they want their kids out there because they think it's safe and it's not a big deal. And it's not really clear as far as what, you know, is the general consensus. But one thing we are seeing is that there has been some developments of outbreaks in various school districts that have opened early. Now, one of the big ones was actually in Georgia. There was a school in Georgia that apparently opened last week, and people were, you know, actually, they were actually disappointed in the school, I should say, because it was shown that they really weren't stressing the social distancing as they stated they would. There was even a viral picture that went out from this high school in Georgia where there was crowded kids in the hallway heading from class to class, and it was just concerning because it was believed that this was definitely going to be a potential source for more infections to spread. And sure enough, this school definitely did have an outbreak. There was about 300 people were quarantined from the school. About 14 students apparently had tested positive. As a result, there's going to be now a forced, or I should say a hybridized training program where some students will be made to stay home and do online. The other students will be in class, and then they're going to alternate. And, you know, this is actually, you know, what, you know, was expected from many school districts to try to implement before the school district start, the school term started, meaning setting up a situation where social distancing could be enforced, trying to make sure they minimize the spread via safe practices and other hygienic interventions. Unfortunately, it was just lip service. Many of these groups weren't really doing much, and they were just kind of trying to push things back to normal, if you would, despite the presence of this deadly virus that's really kind of something we can't avoid. So as a result, many schools have been kind of extending their online period, and they've just kind of made it so that, you know, parents have more access to home learning, virtual learning, and other learning ways that others, you know, modalities to learn where they don't have to be in crowded school situations. Even here in Houston, the Houston Independent School District has also extended home training, home learning for all students for 6 weeks at the beginning of the school year. And then they're going to also try a alternate learning environment. So the reality is that, you know, corporations and other companies and even government institutions are being forced now to really try and implement, you know, effective social distancing based practices to reduce spread of the viruses in the home and work. It's not really enough just to be, you know, saying you're going to do stuff, but not actually putting in the work to ensure those, measures are met. And as a result, I think it's going to be, have a pretty profound effect on the way we do business and the way we kind of interact. We mentioned earlier about the NBA and how they've kind of revolutionized the sporting situation. There's going to be other things that'll be done as far as entertainment venues to get people to be able to have fun safely. Even bars and restaurants are going to have to figure out new innovative ways to get people to eat and drink in their establishments without potentially getting sick. Now, ultimately, all these distancing and wearing masks and everything else, people believe that this is going to unfortunately be the standard of how we interact with one another until we have a reliable vaccine that can give immunity. Now, because of this whole push to get a vaccine, and which has been met with a lot of controversy, a lot of people say the vaccine is nothing but an attempt to, you know, spread some sort of illness or virus intentionally to others. Other people say the vaccine is dangerous and really shouldn't be given because of the history of issues with vaccines. Others are saying the vaccine could be potentially the main way we get back to normal. And that's, what I believe is, you know, the case. It's going to be difficult because vaccines are something that has really gotten a very negative, bad, a very terrible rap. But, you know, unfortunately, the vaccines, you know, fortunately, vaccines are an effective way to help reduce the spread of certain pathogens. Now, the reality is that because of the vaccines and their potential for helping us get back to our normal way of doing things, there's been a very strong push to really research and develop the first vaccine that's going to be effective in helping us being human beings, develop antibodies to this coronavirus infection. Now, many countries have been on the forefront pushing their research, but Russia really came into the news this week because they were actually the first country with a coronavirus vaccine program that's actually gone green-lighted and pushed the vaccine onto millions of its citizens. Now, most vaccine trials have just completed phase two. And phase two is typically when they look at how the virus or the vaccine will do in small groups, usually between 50 to 300 people. Phase two is important because it's, you know, bigger than phase one, which is usually less than 20 people or so, looking for just outrageously bad side effects. It passes phase one, then it goes to phase two, which is just a little bit bigger set of people you're experimenting on, anywhere from 50 to 300 typically. You're looking for any kind of general immune response. And the good news is that the most vaccine makers, especially the US-based makers, especially Novavax and Moderna, they all reported better than predicted antibody responses, meaning that the vaccines produce antibodies in most of the patients who got the vaccine. Now, antibodies are supposed to confer immunity. It's a bit of a complex discussion. We're going to have a whole show on that. I keep saying that, but we're going to do it, I promise. But yes, most vaccine makers who were testing their vaccines went ahead and stated that they had great responses. Now, Russia, which has a company known as Gamovsis Vaccine Corporation, Gameloya Institute is the name of the company in Russia, and of course, in conjunction with the Russian government, developed the vaccine, and they're calling their vaccine the Sputnik V. Now, those people who are, you know their history know that Sputnik V was also the name of their first spaceship that went into space in 1957, which kind of set off the entire space race, which was actually a satellite, actually. And it was, something that made everyone want to get a man on the moon, and we all know how that played out. Now, this vaccine is called Sputnik V, and it's believed to be the first mass-produced coronavirus vaccine. People who are criticizing it, namely those outside of Russia, are stating that they have not really fully tested this vaccine on a wide scale to really, you know, mandate its use as they are doing. But this is Russia. So, of course, when Russia does what it does, it does it when it wants to do it. Russia did state that it had quote-unquote volunteers who had took the vaccine or who were agreeing to take the vaccine. But it's believed that Russia is mandating all of the frontline, teachers, all the police, fire department, everyone who's a frontline frontline worker to take the vaccine. Now, Russia states that they have not done phase three yet, but they believe that because they believe that the numbers of phase two are so good, which is again about 300 people that it was tested on, that now it's safe enough to push on to millions of Russian citizens. So definitely a very unique situation, to say the least. I would highly doubt such a push toward forced vaccinations of a untested vaccine would be something done outside of Russia. But there's no overt protesting that we can see going on, doesn't mean it's not happening, because we know Russian media is heavily sanctioned, and Russia is not like United States or other countries where you can criticize the leadership. You know, there you could potentially get thrown in jail or disappeared, if you will. So even those who are potentially against these potential developments may not be able to, you know, do anything about it, unfortunately, as Putin has, you know, awesome and kind of unanimous power in Russia. So but Putin did state that his daughter apparently did receive the vaccine, and she's doing well. So maybe that's a good sign, or it could be propaganda. You never know. But Russia, you know, officially has been the first country to really mass produce a coronavirus vaccine, and that should be mandated for citizens to take. Now, many people are a little bit concerned about what we're seeing with the vaccines and kind of the antibodies, not necessarily the vaccines, but the antibodies in general associated with coronavirus. As we stated before, people who have developed the coronavirus antibodies from a natural infection, we've been noting that, or it's been being reported, I should say, that within 2 months, the antibodies are disappearing in these patients. And it's concerning because the antibodies are typically how we assess to see if someone is immune to an illness. Hepatitis B is a good example. When you get the hepatitis B vaccine or the infection, you develop antibodies that usually last for many years. It's typically the antibodies are checked every few years to make sure their levels are adequate to ensure that you're still immune. If the antibodies drop, it's then recommended someone receive a booster or a immune booster vaccine, which is just to help increase those levels of antibodies to ensure you're immune. With coronavirus, it's a bit different, as we're seeing antibody levels drop off relatively quickly after the infection has taken place. Coronavirus antibodies are sometimes disappearing in as little as 2 to 3 months, and we're not sure the implications this may have on the effectiveness of a vaccine. So again, vaccines, while believed to be a very, very important tool to fight the coronavirus, may actually not be the end-all be-all at the end of the day. So something we're watching very closely. We're going to bring more news regarding all these developments as they progress. Again, we have a lot to kind of look at, and we're going to continue monitoring this whole process regarding the coronavirus and how it's going to affect our movements in general. So that being said, this is the end of the show. So if you have anything else you guys want to talk about, please don't hesitate to write to us and let us know what it is you want us to expound upon. I'm your host, Dr. Barry. Thanks for listening to our show and really kind of helping us kind of bring some of the more pertinent news to you regarding health and wellness and other things about physical fitness. Again, Dr. Barry, Health and Wellness Connection. Thanks for listening. Until next week, peace.
Thank you for listening to the Health and Wellness Connection podcast and radio show. For more information on ways to get healthy, please check us out. www.anchor.fm/HW Connection. Here you can re-listen to the show, check out older shows, and even further support the show by becoming a subscriber to the podcast. Please check us out today. Again, that's anchor.fm/HW Connection. And also, don't forget to follow Dr. Barry on Instagram @DrBarryMD. Until next time, stay healthy.